the Power Trip After Party Podcast on iHeartRadio.
The Fan.
Hey, it's John Hamm calling in.
Holy moly, it is you. Thank you for calling, man. We really appreciate it.
Of course, my pleasure.
Just do us a favor and don't start gloating because your team's going to kill us tonight. We already feel badly enough. We let two games get away.
There's no such thing.
What a real honor, man. Thank you so much. We're huge fans, and we appreciate you giving us the time.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
So, John, I know you were here for the Winter Classic in January, correct? Do you bounce back and forth for a series like this, or are you just so busy with Top Gun that you just have to watch it from afar?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have not had time to catch any games in person in this series. I have watched all of them, with the exception of Game 2, because Game 2 was smack dab during our premiere, so I was on an aircraft carrier in San Diego, where they did not have a live feed of the game, unfortunately. But yeah, I've watched all the games. It's been an exciting series so far. You know, I think everybody saw us as pretty evenly matched going in, and I think the regular season standings and how it came down to the wire pretty much proved that too.
When you were here for the Winter Classic, what was your favorite bar or establishment you went to?
Oh, man, we went to a lot of great places. We went to a place downtown called Palmer's that was really fun. We went to a place called Bunny's that was really fun. Mm-hmm. We had a good time. I've never had a bad time in Minnesota, and I've been to Minneapolis quite a few times. I used to help out former Senator Franken with his fundraising, so I used to bounce around Minnesota with him quite a few times. It's always a good time. People are very friendly and fun, and that was a fun game, and it turned out well for us, too.
Yeah, game six tonight, and obviously this is podcastable, so by the time most people listen to this, the series might already be over, which is a total buzzkill for us because this is arguably the best Wild team in the history of the Wild, and your team has won cups in the past. It's very frustrating for us, but good for you because it looks like you guys are going to do pretty well. Let's get back to Top Gun, though, for a second. Again, that's the reason why you're so busy. John, I was born in 1980, and I have never seen Top Gun. Is that not the most egregious thing you've ever heard? And I love the 80s. I've seen a million 80s movies. I'm all in. But I don't know why I just missed that one. Clearly, I know all the references. But what is it like to grow up in that era? And now you're freaking a part of it. I mean, it's got to be a little mind-blowing that it came back, and you're a giant part of this one.
Yeah, it is mind-blowing, as you say. I was born in 1971, so I was 15 years old when the first one came out, smack dead in the middle of the demographic that movie was made for. And by the way, do yourself a favor, check out the movie. It's a pretty good movie for an 80s film. It holds together pretty well. But the one we made, this new chapter in the story is even better. You know, it's the flight sequences are some of the most jaw-dropping things you'll ever see, simply because you know it's an actual person in an actual plane. It's not somebody sitting in a chair hung upside down in front of a green screen. It's real, and it's very much a visceral experience seeing this movie. You push back in your seat, you're kind of nervous and sweaty. It's a very exciting experience, and it's one of those things that, you know, like going to live hockey games that I think we've missed for some time. You know, this is our first real playoffs back. That's not in a bubble. It's not an abbreviated season. It's all of that stuff feels like it's finally coming back. And I think going to the movies is another notch in that belt, you know, another thing on that list.
And the movie's doing great with reviews right now, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I can't wait to see it. And I've got a million things, again, I want to talk to you about, but specifically about Tom Cruise for a second, because going back to Corey's point, I am 3 months older than you. So, by the way, 1989, 89 is mighty fine. We were in high school at the same time, and I know you were big into sports as well. I grew up in Indiana. You grew up in Missouri. All the Right Moves was the movie that got me to Tom Cruise, man. Do you remember how much that movie fired us up to play sports when we were in high school?
6'2" Stack Monster. Come
that's
on.
It. Of course. Yeah, man.
That's a great film. And you're right. You know, that was, two very, you know, strong actors from the 80s, Tom Cruise and Leah Thompson. I think Leah Thompson had maybe done Back to the Future or was about to do Back to the Future, but both of those stars were definitely on the rise. And Tom was, it's amazing. Tom Cruise, you know, I know him a little bit now and then talk to him every now and again. You look at him and you think, man, he's been doing this at a high level since the early 80s. He's been famous since he was 18 years old. He's been a movie star since he's 20-something. There's not a lot of guys left in Hollywood that you can point to and say they've been movie stars. They've been famous for four decades. I mean, that's insane. And he's the nicest guy you'll ever want to meet. He's a truly genuine gentleman, and he's a true movie star. It's an impressive thing. And I look at this movie. I think what it must be like to revisit something that you did when you were in your 20s. And I just can't imagine it. And then the fact that it turned out so well, I just can't wait for people to see it. I'm very proud of it.
The one thing about Tom Cruise everybody talks about is how he does his own stunts. What's it like? As Chris just said, you saw him in movies growing up as a kid. You get on set, and all of a sudden, you know, like in the Mission Impossible movies, he's hanging off of an airplane. What is it like to see Tom Cruise do his own stunts?
Well, it's impressive. Yeah, obviously, it's impressive. I mean, the guy wants to make a movie in space. You know, of course he does. It's the final frontier for doing your own stunts. But I remember, I'll tell you a funny story. Of day one of shooting the thing, and we're talking, and I know him a little bit. I've met him a couple times here and there. So he comes up and we start talking, and he goes, "So John, you know, tell me about what are you up to? What do you do? What are your hobbies? You know, do you like flying planes? Do you like skydiving? Do you like do you know how to fly a helicopter?" I was like, "What? Are those those aren't hobbies. Like, my hobbies are like, I don't know. I do jigsaw puzzles. I play tennis. I play video games. I hike. I walk my dog. Like that's." Mine are more a little more pedestrian than the lineup of the X Games.
How much peer pressure do you feel then filming with Tom Cruise that you're supposed to get involved in some of that?
Well, you know, had it been required by the script, of course I would have, you know, strapped myself onto one of those ridiculous things and gone through it. And I've certainly done that in the past in my career. I've been in a movie. One of my first movies, in fact, was a movie called We Were Soldiers, and we had to spend about 2.5 weeks down in Fort Benning, Georgia. This is when I was much younger. It was in 2000. And we had to go through a very abbreviated version of basic training, which involved, you know, all the calisthenics and all of the running the obstacle courses and breaking down weapon systems and all of the things that you basically have to do. We had to learn for the film. So I'm not averse to that, but I was very, very happy that I did not have to go through the months and months of flight training and G training that the other actors, the younger actors, had to do.
Hey, can I ask you a Mad Men question? Because I'm a giant fan. Can we go back to Mad Men for a second?
Of course.
When did you know that show for you was not going to be just a big break or just maybe a consistent paycheck? When did you know that Don Draper was going to be a generational character and that show had a chance to be a generational show?
I it's interesting. I think when the show debuted, we knew it was a hit. And then I think somewhere around maybe season 3, we thought, okay, this is not just a flash in the pan. This is something. The accolades didn't stop. You know, there wasn't a sophomore slump, and there wasn't a kind of lull, and there wasn't a regression back to the norm. People were just still very into it, and I think mostly it was because people hadn't seen a show like that. You know, most TV shows are about, for very good reasons, are about doctors or lawyers or criminals or cops. You know, it's because the stakes are very high with those things. The stakes are life and death. And I think what you saw in Mad Men was the stakes were very real. You know, it was just about things that people were dealing with in their lives and dealing with in their careers. And I think people hadn't seen that presented in a elegant, kind of fashionable, interesting way that was interesting from an anthropological point of view and a dramatic point of view and all of the other things, and had this really kind of amazing amplification of lens of history on it. So you could look back, you felt like the time period was far enough in the past that it was you were able to kind of look at it with a little bit of a judgmental eye, but you could also identify with it at least metaphorically. So I think that there was a lot of that, and I think right around then we were really and it was a thrill. I mean, it's a thrill to be a part of something like that. I hope to have it again, but if I don't, I'm pretty much happy with having that feather in my cap.
Again, John Hamm is our guest. Don't forget, Top Gun Maverick, again, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. It comes out May 27th.
It's good. It's really good. I got to tell you, it's really good. I've seen it twice. It's really good.
I can't wait to see it. I really can't wait to see it. We are mildly obsessed with the butterfly effect on this show. It comes up all the time, and it's just something you could go down a rabbit hole and talk about this a lot. But I wonder your thoughts on this, because I heard you on the Smartless podcast talking about the fact that you almost got a different pilot right before you got Mad Men. Do you ever think about how different your life would be? And have you had other moments in your life that were that giant where, you know, thank God for unanswered prayers kind of thing?
Well, I think it's, yeah, you know, I think there's an overused saying in the world that I think is overused for a reason, but, you know, I think people say, hey, everything happens for a reason, you know, and you can't really see the reason at the time, and sometimes it's cold comfort, but, yeah, when you look back on your life and you think how different my life may or may not have been at various inflection points, I think, yeah, I think about that a lot. But you know, it's unknowable. It's the great unknowable, right? What if I wouldn't have gotten Mad Men? Maybe I would have gotten something better. I don't know. You know, maybe I would have been on Breaking Bad. you know, who can say? But part of it is, I think the lesson to learn from all that stuff is to be grateful for what you do have, and not so worried about what you don't. And I think that carries over into a lot of things in life. I think that's what we talk about when we talk about sports. It's what we talk about when we talk about career, life, marriage, relationships, all that stuff is kind of to be present and to make sure that you're enjoying what you have right now and not having FOMO or what have you of like, well, what's over there? You know, it's like being a dog and you got your treat in your mouth, but you're looking over there at the food and you think, well, I want the treat, but I got the food and I have the treat, but I want the food. You know, it's better to just enjoy what you have. And I've had a lot of twists and turns in my life for sure, but I've been incredibly fortunate. And I remind myself every day when I wake up to be grateful for where I am and what I do have.
That Apple Plus commercial you do is genius. Is that, not that it's any of my business, is that your home? Because that home's incredible.
It is actually, it's not. It's a set. It's a real home. It's somebody's house in West Hollywood. But it's not mine. I think it was, the idea was this is what a cool guy where a cool guy might live. And my house looks a lot different from that. It has a lot more dog hair.
There's also got to be a lot of people in your field that wouldn't do that, because in that commercial, you're the butt of the joke. And I think it's a complete, you're a huge star, but you allow yourself to be the butt of the joke. I think that was sweet. I think that's the best part of that commercial.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought it was fun. It's kind of taken the Mickey out of me, you know, like, why not? It is kind of that classic bitter actor kind of wondering why not him for everything, which I've certainly been at certain parts of my career, like, why aren't I getting X, Y, and Z? And it goes back to what we were talking about, right? It's like, you know, the idea of being happy with what you have and hopefully other things will come. But we found the comedy in it. My friend Wayne McClammy directed it, who I've known for 20 years, and I knew he would find the right tone of it. And yeah, we had fun with it. You know, part of it is to be able to have fun with stuff like that. You know, obviously it's very tongue in cheek, you know, it's just a funny, it's a funny setup, and I was happy to do it. So we'll see. It'll be there may be more of those to come. We don't know.
All right, a couple of final points, because I know you're busy. We're not going to keep you forever. But I'm glad Paul brought up the lighter side of your career, because when you break big with Mad Men and it's a heavy role and it lasts that long, I thought Bridesmaids was super critical to your future, just because we've seen now how funny you can be. Your Saturday Night Live appearances, your Apple commercial. You've done a lot of comedy that's been awesome post-Mad Men. I'm sure you want random advice from a guy in Minneapolis you've never met, but man, you remind me of like a Leslie Nielsen, right? Like a a good-looking dude that was a dramatic actor that just found comedy late, and I think you've shown all of us that you can do both. Is that the kind of person you kind of want to be moving forward, somebody like him?
Well, first of all, I love Leslie Nielsen, and rest in peace. And, you know, you're right. He got his career kind of playing bad guys on TV, and somebody finally recognized that he's a funny guy. And, you know, I owe my kind of entree into the comedic world to Lorne Michaels and to Tina Fey, honestly, because Lorne actually said to me, offered to host Saturday Night Live, and you know, I was like, that's a dream come true for somebody like me to be able to get to host SNL. Was like, you know, there's nothing like that in what I do. That's there's nothing remotely close to live television, hosting SNL, and what that means. So to be able to get a chance to be able to do something that could be fun and funny, and then have Tina Fey, who was writing and producing 30 Rock at the time, say like, hey, come over and you know, and play in our sandbox for a little while. And then on Saturday Night Live, get to meet Kristen Wiig and work with Kristen and realize that she was, enjoying like a fan and was able to say, hey, come over and do this movie with us, with Judd Apatow. You know, it's like all of these people I had met before and knew before, but they didn't know me as anything other than Don Draper. So to be able to get a chance to show that kind of you know, the side of me, honestly, and to be able to say like, I like doing this. I like laughing. I like being goofy and funny and fun. And you know, part of that is the best part of being an actor, is to be able to show both sides and do all those different things. You know, if you want to do the same thing every day, there's a lot of other jobs that you can do that are more suited to that. And the fun part of being an actor is you get to do different things. So I was so very happy to be able to get to do that. And yeah, I owe it to, like a lot of things in my career, I owe a debt of gratitude to a lot of other people, but mostly it's Lorne Michaels who was able to give me the credibility on that side of the aisle.
Last thing I promised, and we'll let you go. And again, thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure.
Great. Thank you. We're still alive, no doubt, talking about the Wild. This is not over. We can win these last two games and move on finally to the second round of the playoffs. But from what you've seen, not just in this series, but even at the Winter Classic, what are we missing as a squad to put us over the edge so that we can finally have a freaking championship in this town?
You know, I can't identify anything in particular. That is a very, very good hockey team, and I think that obviously we match up very well. We're in a lot of ways two sides of the same coin, the Blues and the Wild. I think that what sets us apart a little, and like I say, makes us better. You got 97 on your team, who's a one man wrecking crew at this point. And you have solid players up and down the line, and you have not been, like we have in this series especially, hurt by injuries, which is truly lucky. I think if you look at the way the games have gone in this series, a bounce here and a bounce there, they on paper they kind of all look like lopsided victories, but when you watch the games, I don't think they were lopsided. I don't think anybody thought, with the exception of maybe game four, when you guys went up early, those two quick goals, one was kind of fluky. But even so, you know, there's going to be bounces and there's going to be breaks in every game. I think that part of it is I'll look at the Blues and I'll say part of it is having guys that have been there. You guys have a couple guys that have a few cups in their past, but we have basically the core of that team that's been there. And I think having that kind of, not just leadership, but calmness at the center of what is always a pretty hectic storm, in the playoffs is something that is unmeasurable. It doesn't come up on the Corsi sheet. It doesn't come up on the plus minus. It doesn't come up on anything. And I think you saw, even when we put Binnington in game three, he was in game four, he was ready to go. You know, he knew exactly what he had to do. he came in, ice cubes in his veins, and he shut everything down. And I think, you know, what 50 provides in net with his ability to handle the puck and to break up your forecheck is a very nice addition. He was able to take some pressure off our already insanely depleted defensive core. You know, Parayko and Falk played over 30 minutes in that game. I mean, it was insane the amount of effort they put out on Mother's Day on that game. And it's, I think it all gets back to having those guys that have been there, done that, and can say, you know, everybody calm down. Let's play the game in front of us. Let's win one, and let's win another. And I remember when we were going on our run in 19, Alexander Steen's a good friend of mine, and I would see him, and that was his thing. Alex Petrangelo, those guys, it's like, let's win the game in front of us and worry about the next game tomorrow. So, you know, I can't point to it. You know, you guys have all the tools. It's about everything working together, and I don't know. We'll see. Like you said, I'm not putting this win in the books yet. There's nothing about this series that makes it easy, including last game. That last game was like three different games. There was the big push the Blues had in the first period. There was a huge pushback in the end of the first and the beginning of the second, and the Blues pushback in the third. Any of those pushes don't happen, that's a very different game. So, you know, I'm happy with where we're sitting now, obviously. I'd be an idiot to say I wasn't, but I'm certainly not counting it out. I got a text from O'Reilly this morning. He's not counting it out. They're getting ready to play. These games are decided on the ice, not on the pregame talks on the radio. So I'll be tuning in. I know you guys will be. Maybe you'll be there. I'm flying into St. Louis just to razz everybody. I'll be tuning in, and I'll have a lot of friends in the arena. I know St. Louis will turn out, and it'll be a loud arena. And I'm hoping for the best. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, whoever wins the series has to go play Colorado. So
he's Louise.
I don't know how much anybody's looking forward to that.
Well, John, really, really appreciate the time. Congrats on Top Gun. Excited for the rest of your career and what you make of it. And I hope your team loses by 40.
Well, I'll agree with almost all of what you said, and I'll thank you for it. But thanks for having me on the show. You know, I got a lot of friends up in Minnesota, and I really do appreciate you having me on. And, you know, I hope we win, but hope it's a good game. And we'll see what happens. That's why they play them on the ice.
And real quick, one question for you. What is it like winning the Stanley Cup? Because I've dreamt of it, but your squad win the Stanley Cup like you guys did a few years ago, what was that like?
Well, so wait a minute. So do you take any pleasure in the Stars winning it? Like,
No, zero.
I mean,
no,
not at all.
No. It's like asking if you're happy for your ex-wife.
Another question. Did you take pleasure in the Rams winning the Super Bowl?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, kind of, but like, you know, the Rams were never the St. Louis Rams when I was in L.A. It was a very different thing. Like, I remember when the St. Louis Cardinals went to the Super Bowl and played Steelers. I was kind of like, I guess I root for the Cardinals. They used to be in St. Louis. I mean, I get your point. I remember some very good St. Louis Blues, Minnesota North Stars series from back in the 80s and 90s. You guys always seem to have our number. But what is it like? It is unlike anything I've ever experienced. I got boned by work again, and talk about a sliding doors moment. I was in Vancouver during Game 7, or else I would have been in the building. And of course, I think had I been in the building, we probably wouldn't have won. So I'm very happy that we won and I wasn't there. Everybody was mad. I had to shave my beard because I had to do reshoots on Top Gun. There was all this stuff. It was like, oh God, this is going to be, if they lose, it's going to be my fault. But they didn't. And it was very exciting. I got on a plane the next day. I met the team for team dinner, and we went out that night and we had the parade the next day. And I have a photo of me hoisting the cup underneath the arch with about 250,000 people in the background. It was unlike anything else. It was a great couple of days, weeks, months. And you know, the only real downer was the fact that then the pandemic kind of boned the guy's chance to try to get it again. Yeah. And they were in first place. I think maybe even in the league when the league shut down in 2020, and it was a it was a really good team, and momentum is such a big thing in this sport, as you well know. When guys are clicking and guys are playing great and feeling good and nobody's hurt, it's one thing. And then this COVID thing happens, and you know, who knows what it does to you long term. I'm cautiously optimistic that we can put another run together. I think there's so many good teams out there. I think there's playoffs. When you look at how many points the teams that got in the playoffs have, it's insane. And when you look at the actual matchups now, when you see what LA is doing and you see what Dallas is doing, and when you see what, you know, Toronto has, however many points they finish with in the regular season, and they get Tampa Bay and Andre Vasilevsky in the first round. Oh my God, like that's not fair. And yet here we are. This is the NHL in 2022. So it's exciting to be a part of. Any of these teams on any given night, I think can shock any of the other teams. So like I said, that leads to just saying, play it one game at a time and play the team in front of you and worry about the next day and the next game when it's time. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Oh, yeah.
Winning the cup is awesome.
Yeah, and, sounds incredible. Yeah,
sounds like it's fun.
Yeah, we hope someday to figure that. Listen, we were big fans before this. We're even bigger fans now. Thank you for so much time. We can't wait to see Top Gun Maverick May 27th. John Hamm, what a great pleasure. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Take care.